Welcome, everyone, to the Instructional Leadership Show. I am your host, Justin, and we're here today to continue a series that we are calling the Continuity Project. And this is our second session in the Continuity Project series. And I wanted to devote a period of time to this topic on the Instructional Leadership Show because I think we have a unique opportunity in front of us to adapt and prepare our school communities to adapt to the changes that we're going to have to make. We're going to face a number of challenges in the coming months, serious challenges, and I've divided those into three particular kinds that we're going to tackle in the Continuity Project. The first kind of challenge that we are addressing is the practical level. You know, how do we get the work done that needs to be done, right? There's quite a bit that needs to just be taken care of, and our normal ways of working together often are disrupted by the changes that school closures and the need for social distancing and all of those things are bringing upon us. On a second level, we have to think in terms of our school culture, our culture as a community, a learning community, as an organization. How do we bring people together when we can't meet face-to-face, at least not right now, or at least maybe that's going to happen in stages? How do we create that sense of community and continuity? And finally, on an individual basis, how do we build and maintain strong relationships, whether we're talking about with new hires that we're onboarding, with people that we're welcoming back that we haven't seen in a while? How do we maintain and build those relationships when we're physically separated? These are some of the challenges that we're addressing in the Continuity Project. So again, this is episode 61 of the Instructional Leadership Show. If you are tuning in live, please let me know that you are here, and I would love to see your comments and see what is on your mind about these important and challenging issues that we are facing as a profession. So the two kinds of change that we're facing with each of those challenges are the levels to any kind of change that we might be making. There's the technical level. This is Ron Heifetz's description. Ron Heifetz from Harvard describes technical change and adaptive change. And basically, probably everything that we've made decisions about so far is something along the lines of a technical change. You know, how do we do graduation when, you know, we can't have families sitting near other families? We can't have students sitting near other students. How do we do graduation? We saw a lot of creative approaches to figuring that out. And graduation is one in particular that's worth mentioning and worth thinking about right now because it's such a tradition-laden kind of event. And in your community, I'm going to guess that graduation was probably one of the most controversial issues to come up in the last couple of weeks because graduation means so much to so many people. You know, if you're a student, you only get one of them. You only get one high school graduation. If you're a parent, you only get to go to your child's high school graduation once. There's a lot of symbolism, a lot of meaning, a lot of tradition that has been disrupted. And every wise leader who made a decision about graduation didn't just see it as a technical issue. You know, it was not just, well, we'll pass out masks and hand sanitizer and the whole thing will be fine. No, we knew the symbolism, the way it feels, the way we're interpreting and modifying tradition matters. And that is what I think Ron Heifetz would call an adaptive change, where we're having to consider things that are not just a change in the procedure, but that change us, that change the way we see ourselves, the way we see our relationships to other people. So today is the first of two sessions that we're going to do on helping people manage some of the more adaptive levels of the changes that we're talking about with reopening schools. Next week, we'll talk about metaphor and how we can help people understand the situation that they're in and understand the nature of the challenges that we face through metaphor. Today, we're going to focus on ritual and how school leaders can develop and shape rituals in order to address the challenges that we face. So that's our essential question today. How can we develop new rituals to address the technical and adaptive challenges of reopening schools? And I think this is urgent, this is important because of simply the amount of disruption that we're dealing with. There are so many things that we simply can't do anymore, things that will just be lost, and that's just the nature of it, you know? We are probably not going to have a big assembly on the first day of school. You know, maybe that will be possible. I don't know what the reality in your area will be, but there are going to be many things about the school year that are simply lost, that are simply disrupted, that are simply not possible. And if we treat that simply as a, well, too bad we can't do it, end of story kind of issue, we're going to miss a lot of the human impact, and we're going to be surprised and caught off guard by the degree of discomfort that people feel because of that loss. So ritual can be a powerful way to create that sense of comfort and familiarity and normalcy, even if it's a kind of a new normal, and we all kind of hate that term now, right? That this is the new normal. We can create rituals that allow people to have a sense of confidence and a sense of certainty and a sense of comfort in coming back and relating to one another. And those rituals can actually be a big part of how we both rebuild relationships and reinforce procedures for how we do things. We know we'll have lots of procedures that are different and lots of things that have to be done in a different manner. And those differences, by their own nature, can create a sense of anxiety. They can make people nervous. They can cause difficulty for people in just getting through the day. And we have got to think through those in advance to set our staff and our students up for success. One of the big changes that we will notice right away, and you may have already noticed this if you've been back in your building at all, is simply the lack of casual interaction. The bumping into other people at the water cooler, in the staff lounge, at the mailboxes. Maybe two people need to use the microwave at the same time, and that's inconvenient, but we say, oh, hi, you know, you go first, and we catch up a little bit while the microwave is going. You know, those things that just created serendipitous opportunities for people to interact in our schools are gone. And that might not seem like a big technical problem. Like, the fact that only one person can be standing right at the copier at the same time is not a technical problem. You know, it doesn't introduce any challenges in making photocopies, but it does change the relationship between coworkers who have to, you know, keep their distance and step back and wait, you know, like we've all experienced at the grocery store. Introducing those distancing dynamics into the school environment will impact relationships. It will impact the way things feel. I was talking with Heather the other day about moving mailboxes and how, you know, having one-way flow of traffic past the mailboxes, you know, moving the mailboxes away from the secretary's desk, you know, it's eliminating a gathering point for staff on purpose, right? We're doing this on purpose, but we're also, introducing other dynamics, other elements that we might not have intended or anticipated, but we have the opportunity to anticipate them and design those changes in such a way that they don't make things worse in unintended ways. So let's talk about some more losses. We talked about the loss of casual interaction. What else do we lose when we implement the things that we have to implement if we're not careful about it? One obvious thing that we're all going to feel on the first day back for staff is just the loss of togetherness. And maybe you've experienced this yourself. Maybe you were part of a new school. Maybe you helped open a school and you had a very small team and you could all sit around one table at one point. And then as the team grew, you started to lose that sense of, you know, we're one team sitting around one table and now we're scattered across the library or a larger room. That sense of togetherness is going to feel profoundly different when we are all in different rooms, maybe when we're having more of our meetings via video, maybe we never get together in the same room. I don't know what it's going to be like in your school, but I do know that if we plan for that loss of togetherness, if we plan around it, we can come up with ways to create the same sense of solidarity, the same sense of teamwork, the same sense of camaraderie that we would have in person. But we have to be very, very intentional about that. Another loss is simply the camaraderie from standing side by side. You know, we have different supervision duty. Maybe you welcome students when they walk in the front doors in the morning, and you usually do that with someone else. You have other colleagues that you're on duty with, and just the sense of distance that will be there, I think, is not something we should overlook. So we're going to talk today about how to think through the rituals that we want to put in place, that we want to design and then teach people in our school community to create the sense of continuity that we're striving for. One resource that I want to mention right away that we've been working on over the past couple of days is a guide that we put together based on input from our members on tips for virtual faculty meetings. Now, as everyone who has done this knows, if you try to have an in-person faculty meeting converted into a Zoom meeting, into some sort of online format, you know you can't simply do exactly the same things. And it's not just a matter of the technology being different, right? It's not just a matter of, well, before you walk to the library and now you click on this link and you sit there on your webcam. Like, those are not the only differences, right? There are lots of things that have to be considered. And as a profession, we've gained a lot of new experience with those changes over the last couple of weeks. And the tips and the insights that our members have shared have just been tremendous. I've organized those into just a very short guide, just bullet point guide of what you can do to set up those virtual faculty meetings for success. And if you've already been doing virtual faculty meetings with a degree of success, you might find some ways to make them even better. So I want to encourage you to download that guide at principalcenter.com/faculty. Let me know if you have any trouble with that. We'll get you that PDF, but that should come right to you. And I would love to know what you think about those tips for virtual faculty meetings. And we're going to do the same thing for other topics. And the topic that we are tackling today, if you're just joining us, is ritual. So what is ritual? Let's get into it a bit and talk about how we can design rituals that will send us in the right direction. Rituals are familiar patterns of behavior, right? And they're all around us. You know, we see them every day. We practice them all the time, every week, every month. We have tons and tons of rituals that take us through those important and predictable moments in life. They are not things that we came up with as individuals, but they're things that are shared, often at a cultural level. They're reinforced by the group. And, you know, originally they were probably designed to solve some sort of specific problem in a specific situation. And then they just become the norm. They become the tradition. And often we use tradition in kind of a bad way, but I don't mean tradition in a bad way. You know, usually there are some good reasons behind our rituals. Now, in schools, often we call rituals routines and procedures. You know, ritual sounds too religious, it sounds too personal, so we don't really love that word. But I'm using that word very intentionally because I think there's a sense of gravity, a sense of seriousness that needs to accompany our thinking when it comes to our routines and procedures for returning to school. It's not enough to think in terms of the where do people stand, how do they use hand sanitizer, all those things. We need to be thinking about this as leaders with the level of seriousness that we think about other rituals that take us through some of our most important moments in life, like high school graduation for our seniors. But think through how many different rituals there are. There are tons and tons and tons that we use for different aspects of life. We have rituals and kind of standard serious ways of doing things like lowering a flag, having a graduation, a wedding, a funeral, a religious service, singing the national anthem before a ball game or at other certain kinds of events, baby showers, dedications, quinceañeras, bar mitzvahs, bat mitzvahs, retirement parties, convocations to kick things off, a groundbreaking, a ribbon cutting, a toast or a roast, maybe at a wedding reception, the Olympic torch lighting. We have all these different rituals for the important moments in life. We also have important rituals for the maybe lighter-hearted moments in life. Things like the first pitch at a ball game, you know, the celebratory first pitch, blowing out the birthday candles. We recently celebrated a birthday, and rather than have the person blow out the candles on the cake, we just, you know, picked up the candles, blew them out one at a time, and then, you know, that felt a little bit better for the moment. We have rituals for birthday parties. You know, we've seen a lot of innovation in that area. We've had a lot of birthdays in our family lately, and one of the neat things that I've seen happen to kind of form a new ritual is the birthday parade, right? Have you seen that? People drive by, they make signs, they honk, they wave. People did that for our daughter who had a birthday last month, and it was fabulous. It was very sweet. It was a lot of fun. It was different, and it was weird because it was different, but it's becoming a normal thing now, right? You've probably been in a birthday parade or at least seen one in your neighborhood, and we can develop new rituals for those important moments if we're thoughtful about it. And it's been neat to see that particular birthday parade ritual form. So let's think about some different kinds of rituals that might need to be on our radar as we reopen schools. Now, the nice thing about each of these kinds of rituals is that we don't have to start from scratch in our thinking, because there are already rituals in each of these areas across our society. For example, one of the things that we're going to have to think through in a lot of detail, and you might be sick of thinking about this one already, but the idea of hand washing and just keeping things clean and washing surfaces and having students sanitize their hands before they go into the classroom or before they eat lunch, there's a lot of thought that's going to be put into that, and it has the potential to feel kind of bad, right? And to be kind of a logistical nightmare and to be a big, kind of drain on our time. But if we look at the medical profession and how the rituals have developed around hand washing, it's not ceremonial in the sense that it's done just for show or just for its own sake. There is a clear purpose behind it, but it's been accepted as a necessary and important ritual as part of medical care. And this is one that the medical profession honestly did not develop easily, right? It took decades. It took, in some cases a century or more for the proper rituals for hand washing to really enter the medical profession, and for the idea that doctors should wash their hands or sanitize their hands between each patient. That was really hard for the medical profession to really grasp and to internalize. And because they finally have, it's saving, it continues to save lives to this day. We also have rituals around preparation. We think about how teachers prepare for the school year, how they develop the routines and procedures for their class, how they prepare the room, how they prepare the walls. And every teacher who comes back, reports for duty the first staff day back, wants more time to work in their classroom, right? To do that preparation, to have everything laid out where it goes for students so that, everything is ready. And there is a French term that refers to doing this in a professional kitchen where you kind of chop all the ingredients and lay them out and prepare them so that you're ready to cook. Teachers do that every year. And our preparation this year is going to look very different, but the ritual of preparation is going to be more important than ever for us to think through. We will also have rituals around safety. And this is where we have to be really careful about the feeling that we're creating, because again, it's not just a technical change. As any educator who has transitioned into a school or worked in a school that transitioned into using metal detectors for students, there is a very real change in the feel of an environment where you put new safety procedures in place. I remember visiting schools for the first time after some particular incident of school shooting or something like that, where schools almost universally started to be locked and you had to get buzzed in. You had to walk past adults who would, look at you and let you in, or maybe ask you questions first. There's a very different feel that safety protocols and procedures have by their very nature. And it's on us as leaders to build rituals around those that are welcoming, that create a sense of safety and not just a sense of security and process, but really create a sense of welcome. So this is not just about security, it's also about health. One of the things that you may have to do as you welcome students back is take temperatures or, screen for other signs of illness. And we are going to have to think through as leaders how to do that in a way that makes people feel welcome. Like, this is just part of it. This is what we do. Good morning. Beep. I don't know exactly what that's going to look like or feel like, but you have an opportunity as a leader to design that process, not just as a technical procedure, but as a ritual that welcomes your students, that makes them feel safe, that makes your staff feel safe, that creates a sense of comfort and familiarity and predictability and camaraderie, like we're all in this together. And of course, we could go on and on. We've got things about social distancing. You might have had to mark the floor in your school, maybe with your custodian, maybe you got stickers or tape or something to show people how far apart they need to stand. You'll have things about washing and sanitizing hands and about dealing with absences and making sure that people stay home when they're sick, and how students can continue to learn maybe when they're staying home because of concerns about illness or actual illness. But in all of these changes, what we're doing with ritual is we're creating a sense of comfort that comes from a familiar and shared ritual, a familiar routine that has some meaning to it, that we're invested in, and that creates a sense of trust. Now, one of the things that's going to be essential for maintaining that trust and people's comfort level and reducing their anxiety is if we can all be on the same page. And I know there's been a lot of controversy and a lot of, kind of hard feelings and difficulty when it comes to things like social distancing and masks. You know, that's a big kind of hot debate item in stores and in communities where, you know, there are some differences of opinion about what exactly is necessary. And as leaders, if we have people who feel that one thing is necessary and other people who feel that that's not necessary and they're not going to do it or they don't want to do it, that really creates a powder keg of, for anxiety and for conflict. And we have the opportunity as leaders to create a sense of trust and a sense of familiarity and camaraderie. And again, we're all in this together by clarifying how we're going to do what we need to do. So a couple of questions to ask yourself, and then I'll turn it over to you for thinking through some examples. And I would love to get your input on these. A couple of questions to ask yourself. First of all, to design a ritual, you need to ask yourself first, what is it that I need people to do? We need to have a faculty meeting. We need to introduce our new hire to the rest of the staff. We need to welcome students back. We need to get students to wash their hands before lunch. Whatever the ritual is, we need to check our mail in the morning. We need to use the copier. Whatever the ritual is, we start with thinking about what needs to get done, but we don't stop there. This is the key. We don't stop with what needs to get done. We go ahead to the next step, which is to think about how we want people to feel as a result of going through that process in the way that it needs to be handled. If I cannot have two people standing by the copier at the same time, I need to not just think, how do I prevent two people from standing by the copier at the same time? But I need to think, what feeling do I want people to walk away from the copier with, and how can I create that feeling? What rituals would create a sense of consistency and comfort? What would make people feel like they're able to connect, they're able to interact, make eye contact with other people? You know, maybe we have two copiers side by side and we put plexiglass between them so people can still stand there and chat. I don't know what's going to work for your school and your situation, but these are the questions that I want to encourage you to think through. So what will create comfort? What will create consistency? And how can we teach them in a welcoming way? One of the things that I've seen come out of some different schools' efforts to teach these, to implement some of these new rituals, is to actually brand them and to say that this is the eagle way, or the badger way, or whatever your school mascot is. What's the wildcat way of walking in the hallway? This is a classic PBIS technique, right? When we train students on routines and procedures, we teach students how to meet our common kind of tier one expectations as a school by branding those expectations as just the way we do things in our school. It's a great culture builder for your school, for your, use your mascot and get people kind of thinking in terms of the, common language and common expectations. But don't just limit that to, how we teach the kindergartners or the ninth graders to walk in a straight line, right? Like, that's not what this is about. It's about creating a sense of predictability and trust for everyone. Now, where do we go with this? Well, that depends on what rituals you will need to design. So with all of this in mind, I would like to turn it over to you, and I would invite you to leave a comment below and do some brainstorming and do some responding to other people. What rituals will you need to develop for the new school year? So what do you want people to do, and how do you want them to feel? Let us know below. I'd love for you to leave a comment, and I'll put those questions back up here. What do you want people to do? How do you want them to feel? How can you teach that in a welcoming way? Maybe brand it according to your school's mascot, or just the language that you already use to define your culture and your expectations. And what's going to create that sense of consistency and comfort for people? So think through that, leave a comment, let me know, respond to other people's comments, and let's get some ideas out there. And if you are not already signed up for the Continuity Project, we are doing some collective thinking about this over the next couple of weeks. And as I mentioned, we already have a PDF guide on virtual faculty meetings put together. You can download that at principalcenter.com/faculty. And we are also posting that at our community, in our community SIVME account. If you go to principalcenter.com/community, you can sign up for the, continuity, principalcenter.com/continuity. You can sign up for the Continuity Project and get signed in there, download the resources, participate in the discussions, and we will figure this out together as a profession. So that is what I have for you today. Thank you so much for being part of this profession, for putting the thought in and the care and the heart into your work every day, for being the kind of leader who is not just thinking about the technical challenges of, you know, how do we make a spreadsheet for this or that, but really thinking about the people and what our, not only our students need, but what our staff need in order to be present and to do our best work on behalf of our students. So thank you for everything you do every day. Thank you for being here and for tuning in. And thank you for commenting and discussing with other people how you are going to create those rituals for your school for the new year. That's it for episode 61 of the Instructional Leadership Show. I'm Justin Bader, and I'll see you next time. Take care.